Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 927. Say, do you have big plans for the new year, Jonah?
You bet I do.
What are you going to be doing with your new year?
Finally starting that diet. You know, for years I've been saying the diet starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow it starts.
Yes.
Would you like to put that on the internet?
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
Well, Squarespace will make it easy to turn your idea, like your diet, into a unique website or blog.
It's a good way to stay accountable and connect with other people that might be doing the same thing.
No, Jonah, you don't have to install, patch, or upgrade ever.
That's what was going to be my next point.
Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. When you are ready to launch, use the offer code NERDIST to save 10... ampersand off your first purchase of a website 10%. Or a 10%.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Is there an ampersand in there?
No, I was just doing a bit.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right. Bit killer. Kenny Levine's a bit killer.
What about logic?
Oh, it's all fine. It's all fine. Yeah. Say, Katie, what do you got on the old Nerdist Community Corkboard?
Oh, I'm going to fuck this up, too.
Look, Katie gets real.
Here I go again. Choo-choo, here comes the Katie train wreck.
Oh, my God, I want to make that your ringtone when you call me. Yeah, I'm going to fuck this up again.
Okay, so Reddit user Bill Nobes writes, my friends and I are performing a stage reading of, I cannot pronounce this, John, how do you say that?
I don't know.
Can I take a shot?
Yeah. Is it Jean? I think it's a French name. Unholy. Unholy?
Jean Anouilh's Antigone.
Yes.
We're all horribly non-academic here with regard to French.
Antigone, and January 27th at 7 p.m. in Trenton, New Jersey at the Trenton Coffee House. Admission is free, but please do buy coffee because the owner, Abdul, is an amazing person. The play was originally written and performed in Nazi-occupied France and was meant to encourage people to resist. The playwright chose the Greek play Antigone as a framework to hide the message of the play and get past German censors. It seems really relevant today, and we've done some updating to reflect current political climate. For more info, go to Bill Nobes, that's NOBES.com. And then Tyler R. Lee, he says, I recently published my first novel, a fantasy adventure titled An Unlikely Company, a half-orc hunter, a goblin sorceress, a dwarf fighter, and an elf druid and her tiger companion are thrown together by chance. With more than a bit of reluctance, the four loners stumble upon an evil plot and discover they may be the land's only hope. If they don't kill each other first, it can be found on Amazon, in ebook or paperback, or his website, talesoftrlee.com.
Excellent.
Oh, I got a couple things.
What do you got?
Pre-orders are up for a movie I was in. I'm in Victor Crowley, which is the fourth installment of the Hatchet films by Adam Green.
Fantastic.
I'm in the cold open. I get killed. Dream come true.
Spoiler?
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? It happens so soon.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it's fine.
But the trailer's up for Victor Crowley.
And for all those of you who have a Jonah Ray torture fantasy, then now they'll get to see that.
There it is. And then on top of that, pre-orders are up for that on iTunes and all that stuff. And it's neat. It was fun. It was fun to go, did an overnight shoot, got to do a whole bit, get chased down, killed. It was one of the things that actually inspired me to get LASIK.
Oh, that's fantastic.
They didn't want me having my glasses on, mainly, I think, because of the reflection.
Right.
And they're like, it's just going to slow us down.
Right.
And then they had me running in the dark through the woods, and I almost gouged my face out of some broken, jagged branches. And
so
I was like,
I'm going to get LASIK.
Yeah. And then also, you know, we've been doing... Every week, we've been doing a Jonah Radio.
Oh, I love it.
It's back. This week, we have from the Rentals and formerly of Weezer.
Matt?
We have Matt Sharp. Matt Sharp came down and hung out with us, and we barely played any music. The guy can like really just talk about stuff in his life, and he's very interesting. It's a very, very fun. And last week, the episode of now, we had Jerry Duggan, old friend Jerry Duggan.
Oh, our friend Jerry Duggan. Jerry Duggan used to play D&D with Jerry Duggan.
Yeah, yeah. So it's we've been doing it. We've been playing a lot of submitted music. If you are interested in hearing your music played on Jonah Radio, it's jonahradio@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Congratulations. I also will be performing at, let's see, where am I going to be? I'm going to be at Stand Up Live in Phoenix.
I love that venue.
It's a great venue. At the beginning of February, and then the following weekend, Brea, and then the following weekend, Levity Live in Oxnard. So doing all February doing shows. So nice. Just,
and none of them are too far away, so it's kind of, yeah.
Google that shit! This episode is Ricky Lindholm, who I just adore Ricky Lindholm. I've known Ricky since... She and Kate first started coming around and doing Garfunkel and Oates. Mm-hmm. And she, not only is she so incredibly smart, but has such a phenomenal work ethic. Like, the workaholics all kind of recognize each other. Like, how do you sleep at night? You know, and we do talk about that kind of stuff. But Ricky, the output of her work is unbelievable. And Another Period is back January 23rd on Comedy Central, the show that she does with Natasha Leggero and a bunch of comedy people that are relevant to your interests. Which is such a fucking great show, and they're great on it, and they write it, and it is a fantastic show, and I urge you to watch it and support good scripted comedy on Comedy Central January 23rd. Please support their show so they can keep making more of it.
Yes, they have a bunch of great shows on right now. They got Corporate coming out.
Yeah, Corporate's coming out soon.
Detroiters is coming back.
Is great.
Yeah, so support those shows.
Yeah, thank you very much for being on. And thank you for doing the intro, Jonah.
Oh, of course.
We just recorded another podcast, and Jonah just stuck around just to be on the intro. I think we're going to bang out a Hostful this week, too. We're going to record one.
That's right.
We'll drop that soon. This episode, as I mentioned, was brought to you by Squarespace. So just, you know, make the thing. It's the new year. Make the thing that you're going to make. Whether it's a business or a blog or a portfolio or whatever it is, showcase any kind of digital content you want. Customize everything from look and feel to settings and product. It's all optimized right out of the box for mobile. You can use Squarespace's analytics to help you grow in real time. And then, like I said before, you don't have to install, patch, or upgrade anything. And if you have a question, Squarespace's 24/7 customer support is there to help. A dream is just a great idea that doesn't have a website yet. So give it some type of web presence, some sort of digital manifestation. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code NERDIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That is squarespace.com. Did I say domain?
Yeah, so it's like domain.
Jermaine. Clement.
Jermaine Clement.
Brit.
Yes.
Present. Head to squarespace.com. Use the offer code NERDIST. Here's the Nerdist podcast number 927 with Ricky Lindholm. Katie, roll the thing.
Is it really rolling? It's not. She doesn't roll it. She presses a button.
Don't be the internet.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to my house/podcast studio.
Nice, it's beautiful.
You wait. I was trying to have you and Kate. We talked. We realized you and Kate were on
in Bumbershoot,
but like in like 2010. I think it was like the first year.
Yeah, it was
of the podcast,
and it was like the first one of the first live shows, right?
Yeah, it was one of the first live shows. It was at that little theater that's part of the Bumbershoot. Mm-hmm. Campus, which is really just that central part of downtown Seattle.
That was so much fun.
It was really fun.
God,
but
Bumbershoot's the best.
You, I think David O'Doherty was there.
Yep.
I think we did.
Was Patton there? Or am I making that up?
I don't know. He might have been.
Maybe I'm making that up. Maybe he had the show after you guys or something. No, you were on a show with Patton. That was it. You guys did stand up on the same show.
We did do stand up on the same show?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You did.
Those bumper shoot shows were so much fun. So much fun. Have you been back?
No.
I haven't either. I don't think I've been back since then either.
I know. I don't think they do a lot of duplication.
No. But it has been like 7 years.
I know. It's like 10 years.
Come on.
Hard and Firm, Garfunkel and Oates.
Ah, that'd be so much fun.
Oh, I would so do that.
You know, there was a period of time where it was like performing with some of the other duos, like performing with you and the Concords. Mm-hmm. We have some fun, like, nightmare stories about performing.
With the Concords?
Well, we did, there was a festival in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And we did it with the Concords in like 2004, I think, or 2005. Mm-hmm. And they had put us in a bar to perform. So we were performing in a bar, which sort of had like a shotgun shape to it.
Oh, God.
So you're performing in
a tunnel where everyone's talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so it was really weird the way they did it. They kind of fucked up because they, like, you could go if you were a festival goer, but I think part of the deal was that they couldn't close the bar to bar patrons.
Oh, right.
So it was like, oh, well, it's not really a...
So this isn't a festival.
Because we were performing on a band stage, everyone in the bar who was not there for the show was just like, oh, there's a band on stage. So they just talked really loudly over us.
Oh!
So
they couldn't get the subtleties of... Pie or these other songs. Like, oh God, I remember when Kate and I first started, we'd written like maybe 4 or 5 songs, and half of them were comedy and half were just kind of regular songs. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, where do we play? Do we play comedy venues? Because we didn't know any other comedy. We didn't know anything that was happening. And so we played a couple music venues and a couple comedy venues, and we're like, oh, it has to be comedy because we can't handle people standing.
Oh, that's so funny.
Because if people are standing up, the rule is you can talk between songs.
Right.
And that's where we do all our banter and all our comedy. It was like between the songs, and we're like, oh, people can't hear us if...
God, that's so funny because we arrived at the opposite conclusion.
Oh.
Because we started in doing clubs and we had a couple rough shows at clubs and then we realized because our songs, comedy songs, unless it's like Stephen Lynch, where it's just like joke. They're really just kind of a sketch that the audience has to buy into.
Yeah, and there's like a setup, it has to breathe a little, you have to...
And if the audience doesn't buy the premise of the sketch, then they just have to sit through it.
Yes.
And so we realized after touring for a bit in clubs, we would much rather be the funny guys in a music venue than the music guys in a comedy venue.
Interesting. That's funny. We went to the opposite.
We did.
Although your stuff is more rock and roll. It's more like you have harmonies and like more... It's louder.
It is louder.
Kate and I have tiny voices, and we can't sing harmony, and we've got a uke and a guitar. It's very dinky. Like, everything about us is dinky, and so it didn't go well with music venues.
You also have to... It's funny, because our songs you have to listen to understand the concepts, but your songs you really have to listen to because you guys are so hyper-articulate in some places that it's very... It's like you can really easily miss jokes if you're not paying
attention.
So
fast. And we go so fast when we're playing live. We just speed through it. And if you miss it, you kind of miss it. And we've talked about that. We're like, we should like tell a joke and then give it a second. But we're like, oh, no. And then we never do it.
Well, this is not something I can say to a lot of people, but it was an honor being in your hand job video.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You were wonderful.
I appreciate it.
That was such a fun cameo when you were just like sitting in the corner. It was the first time we like had a person in a video other than us because we were just always playing on my couch and we panned over when we had the Chris Hardwick line. And yeah.
I forget sometimes, but you kind of like YouTube kind of like kickstarted you, didn't it?
We would not have a career if it wasn't for YouTube. We're so grateful to YouTube. And we didn't know it was going to be a thing. Like when we started on YouTube, we put these two videos on my couch up because I was leaving the country for a few months and Kate was going away for a few months and we wanted like our moms to see the videos and stuff. We loved our two songs. But I was like, "Oh, there's this thing YouTube." And Kate's like, "Oh, well, should we make it like nice and put makeup on?" I was like, no, no one will see it. Like nobody knows about this thing, you know? And then, cause I didn't know it wasn't really a thing. And our YouTube channel was the first half of my email address. It's our YouTube channel is Ricky Lind. It's not even Ricky Lindholm. It's not Garfunkel and Oates, and you can't change it.
No.
So I just, you know, like 3 years in when we're like, oh, we have a YouTube channel and it's called Ricky Lind. That's not a great, in all lowercase letters. It's still that.
What year was that?
That was 2007, 2008.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so that that was because YouTube, I'm pretty sure YouTube's 2005 was when it started. So 2007 is when it really started turning into like, oh, it's not just teenagers making video confessionals in their on their webcams.
Right. It's not just and like things like happen for people from like when so I left the I went to South Africa to film a movie and Kate had gone somewhere. Oh, she went to New York to do something. And then I went to Spain right after. So I'd just been gone. So I was gone for maybe 4 or 5 months. And Kate called me in Spain. And she's like, so the creator of Scrubs called. And he wants to use one of our songs on Scrubs. And I was like, wait, one of our YouTube songs? She's like, yep. And so he hired Kate to play some part on there, like of a nurse or something. And she was going to sing it with this guy. And I was like, yes. And she's like, how much do we charge? I was like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. And I was like, I guess whatever the minimum is. I'm like, we don't have a recording of it. We don't have, like, we only have, like, the grainy YouTubes. Like, they have to re-record the whole thing. I was like, just whatever the scale of it is, let's just make sure it gets on there. Because we never thought we could sell. And then after that, people started watching our channel.
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And do you still put stuff up on there?
Yeah, not that often, though. We haven't been writing songs. Like, since I started Another Period, it's been, which is a TV show.
It's
not
a television
not
show.
My period.
Yeah, it's not. I had a period last week. I had another one this week.
And then I started another one. It's just, it's relentless.
Lousy with periods.
Although that did happen to me once. When I was doing the Garfunkel and Oates show, Ken Marie was in the same hallway editing, I think, the Bachelor show he was doing.
Oh, right.
Was
yeah,
it called?
Yeah.
What was that show called?
Burning Love.
And he walked in. He's like, oh, how's it going? Whatever. I'm like, I'm good. Just working on Another Period. And he was like, cool. And then I was like, no. Oh, my God. And the show wasn't even out yet. I don't know why I thought he would know about it. And I was like, no, not my
period. Not my actual period. Yeah. It's the name of a show.
And he was like, okay, cool. I didn't think I knew you well enough for that comment. And I was like, yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. But no, we haven't put up a video in a while. I want to write more songs, but
it's shocking to me that you, like, your work ethic, I mean, is incredible because
I mean that's a lot coming from you because your work ethic is so incredible.
No, but you know like Mike Furman and I, because Mike produced your albums, mm-hmm. and you know, we always talk about how, because we toured really hard to get our Comedy Central Half Hour special, which I think we shot in 2008, mm-hmm. and then once we did that, we just like pooped out. We were like, oh my God, I don't know what else to
It's so,
do.
I mean, after you write 50 songs, you're like, what's number 51? Like,
well,
we
didn't write 50 songs, but when he records with you, he was like, it's fucking unbelievable. They release an album and then like the next Monday they're in the studio recording more tracks. He was
that
like,
is true.
And I go, yeah, Mike, I think that's how you're supposed to do it. And we just like, I don't know what other songs to write about.
I feel bad for Mike because I'm like, I think we have a good, you know, Mike is like so sweet, but I feel like I'm like a little psychotic. And so, but I think he can take it. Like he can take, cause I feel a little bad. Cause I'm like, I don't know. Try it again. Play it again. Play it again. Play it again. Play it again. Like I'm just like that.
You just need to hear it.
I'm just controlling and
I know, but
specific.
I know your brain spins a million miles an hour because we've had the talk about like what it takes for you to fall asleep.
Oh my God. It's a lot. It is a lot. It's always like if I start dating someone, it's a little much to like introduce them to it. I'm like, so you know how like everyone's got like, you know, you have your things that you're like, okay, when am I going to tell the person about those things? Like that's one of my main things. I'm like, when are they going to find out that I'm terrible to be in a bed with?
Can you date another insomniac, or does the other person have to like sleep through anything?
Oh, I'd love to date another insomniac. I never have really. That would be amazing because then they would totally understand my plight.
Or you might drive each other crazy.
Maybe.
It's possible you might drive each other crazy. But it's, you know, I'll see Instagram posts about your apartment and I kind of in the back of my head I was like, I bet she was up all night organizing.
Kind of, yeah.
I bet she, yeah. I can just imagine you like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you're like, I'm gonna paint that closet and just start painting a closet.
It's pretty much like that. But I've been training myself to like do things that turn my brain off like after a certain hour. So I'll watch like Law and Order or Bones or Friends or something that's just like, I'll make myself sort of be in a like, what's it called when your computer goes on rest? Like
what, sleep mode?
Sleep mode. That's it. Yeah. So I'll go on like
screensaver mode?
Yeah, I'll go in screensaver mode.
Nice.
Where I'll like try to make myself stay in there. I'll play solitaire on my iPad or my phone. Like mindless kind of.
Listen, it is sort of the blessing and the curse of being like a high functioning obsessive, which is you'll probably do amazing career things. Mm-hmm. You just won't sleep a whole lot.
I just won't. Like
you'll never be able to.
Yeah, I'll never take a nap.
When people say,
I love when people tell me, they're like, oh, you should take a nap. I'm like, I want to be like, yeah, and you should fly home. Like, fuck you. Like, yeah, I can't.
You should sprout wings if you don't like traffic.
You should just do it. It's easy. Watch.
Yeah, just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's when people say like, wow, it's amazing that you do so much. I kind of feel like, there's a choice, right.
I'm always awake.
Exactly. Oh, I woke up at I woke up at 3:30 this morning, and I had to be at Kevin and Bean at 7:10.
Damn.
And at like 5:45, I was like, "Well, I can't go back to sleep now."
No, no, might as well.
That's just it. I'm up.
Get up and start.
Do you drink coffee? Oh,
yeah. Have. I've got a latte right here. Yeah.
Did you have you ever tried not drinking coffee?
I gave up caffeine for 6 months once, and because I was like going to give it a real try, because everyone's like, "No, you'll sleep better with it," and it was the worst 6 months of my life. I didn't sleep better, and I was tired all the time. But I feel like I gave it a real.
You
go.
Really tried.
Yeah, it was in like 2010.
I think some of us just have. Brains that are like spinning tops.
Yes.
When they just.
Yes.
And it's just, you know.
And I feel like never... Mike Furman can handle it when we're in the studio, but sometimes I'm like, was I a little too weird? Was I, like, I think I was okay. And he's always, you know, he's the nicest human.
This is Mike.
So, yeah. All right. Yeah.
I mean.
And Kate Micucci's the nicest human. So they both, you know, are fine. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I think I got a little intense. I don't know.
Well, it's so funny the evolution of Kate Micucci.
It's amazing.
Through Garfunkel and Oates.
Oh my God.
Because I remember a time where she was like, oh, I don't think I can say hand job on stage. And you're like, Kate, just say it.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, it was a slow, and now she's like.
Kind of filthy.
Yeah, she's doing like three naked threesome scenes in TV shows and just like, you know, putting it all out there. And yeah, it's like, I've never seen someone change so much in what I think is for the better. Because her essential core is still the same. Like, she's still like, pull over. And I'm like, what? And she'll get out and she'll be like, look at the moon. Like, that's still.
That's a great case.
Oh my God. That's still there. That has not gone away. But then she's also like, naked
scene? Look at the fucking moon.
Yeah, exactly. That's. And she still's like, I got a text from her the other week that was like, should I do a painting with rainbows and spaghetti? This is real. And I was like, you absolutely should. And we're like, okay, we'll call it Rainbow Sketty. And now she has like a whole Rainbow Sketty line of paintings.
That is, you know, but I would imagine Kate Micucci is like reaching up and pulling out actual rainbows.
Yes,
and
yes.
Smearing them on a canvas.
There's because something about that. She's magical.
She's magical. She's a magical creature.
Yes, she is.
She would be studied at Hogwarts.
She would. She totally would be. But we had this song called The Loophole, which is like
about, I know The Loophole.
Yeah, it's about anal sex. And I had the idea and I brought it to her and I was like, I thought we were past, you know, oh, we can't say the fuck word, you know, or whatever. We can't say hand job. Yeah. Thought we were past it. And I brought her this idea and she was like, oh, I don't know. And then, you know, the main lyric is fuck me in the ass because I love Jesus.
Yep.
And it's a lot. It's
a
lot.
Do you know the song, Katie? Yeah.
It's a lot. And she was just like, no. And then, and the thing with Kate is, she's very strong and she seems like meek, but she's not. Like, if she says no, that is the end of the story.
Right.
And I know that. Like, she's like, I don't think so. And I'm like, okay. And like, cause that's you know, even like, probably not. It's over. Mm-hmm. And I know that. And so I didn't bring it up. And then a year later, she's like, I need to talk to you about something. I'm like, all right. And I come to her house and I'm like, what's going on? She's like, I'm ready to do The Loophole. And I was like, yes.
How metaphorical in a weird sort of way of like someone coming to go, I'm ready for anal sex.
Yeah, exactly.
What? In the song. I'm ready for anal sex in the song.
Right.
But it's such a great, I mean, that's one of those, first of all, I feel like you were probably a couple of the only people who could have gotten away with that song.
Yeah. I get away with so much more because she's next to me. I do. I get to, like, because she's so cute that we get to say lots of stuff.
But but the tonal quality of your voices on stage is so, it's very earnest.
Yes.
And so the earnestness really counterbalances, like, I think anyone else would have been like, fuck me in the air, you know, right. And then it's just too much.
And we're, like, playing characters who are coming to their boyfriends and being like, listen, like, you know, I can't have sex with you because I'm a Christian, but
We found this loophole.
Fuck me in the ass. Because I love Jesus. Like, yeah, it is very sincere.
I mean, the math on the logic tracks.
It tracks. It totally tracks.
Did you grow up in a religious household?
My house wasn't particularly religious, but my town was. Okay. I grew up in a town of 1,000 people, like south of Buffalo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I went home, you know, before the election. It's just all Trump signs and Trump, you know, that's kind of the vibe. And so
what are all your friends doing?
I don't really know that many people from high school anymore. I have one friend who moved to London, and she's like works in the government in London, and then one friend who lives in Buffalo, and those are the only two people I keep in touch with. So
oh, gotcha.
I don't really go home.
Just when you got out, that was like, I'm out.
Pretty much.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I got aspirations.
Well, I mean, the last time I went out in my town, I'll go home, but I won't go out. Like the last time I went out, I got in just so many weird conversations with people that it was like, I don't know if I can take this anymore.
Like what?
Like one girl, like I like my major credits were like being an extra on Nash Bridges and one McDonald's commercial. And that was like a lot for people to take.
Sure.
Like this one girl, like basically like told me off because she was like, I see you. She's like, you know what? You won. And I was like, what?
What competition?
And she's like, I just see you on TV. And I'm like, you know what? Fine. She wins. But this was the weirdest part. So I was like, oh, what are you talking? Who is? And I didn't know who it was I was talking to.
Sure.
I didn't recognize her. And she was like, you know, me and you, we were like so competitive in high school. And I'm like, who's this girl? Who's this girl? Who's this girl? Going through my head. It was like only like 5 years after high school. And I was like, I wasn't really competitive with anyone. So I couldn't place her. And it was going, she's going on and on. And then just started telling me off. And then finally I was like, I'm sorry. Who are you?
Did you remember
and
her?
After she said her name, I was like, oh, okay.
You.
I thought about you all the time.
Oh,
I'm just trying to defeat you.
I'm sorry. That was a tactic.
Right. Yeah.
That was a tactic on my part.
Right. And in my mind, I'm like, what were we competing for? Like, there was nothing. We weren't in the same activities. Like, we weren't. Like, she wasn't in the band. She wasn't in chorus. I'm like, what were we?
It's so crazy the stories that people write in their head about. I mean, I feel like that's most of culture now is there is almost a religious quality of the way people, where it's like, oh, I don't know the answer to this, so I'm going to fill in the gaps and make all these connections, which may or may not be true, but this is going to form the basis of my core belief system, whether or not, you know, and no matter what you say, or no matter how much evidence you might be able to bring me to the contrary for whatever this issue is.
And you also can't prove a negative. I can't prove to her that I never thought about her.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't prove that we were not rivals.
Right.
Or that it was a one way, you know, so.
So I guess you were rivals.
Yeah, I guess. Well,
you won.
One way I did.
So good for you.
I got that McDonald's commercial.
Yeah, Nash Bridges.
And then it was just like, you know, smooth sailing from there. It hasn't been hard at all.
I noticed on Lydia's, because we use Lydia's Apple TV account, and she recently purchased Last House on the Left. And I don't know if she's seen it. But as much as I...
That's what I was filming in South Africa.
You filmed that in South Africa?
I know, right? It was cool.
That's amazing.
It looks like Maine. I don't know.
There was nothing South African about that.
Not. We were in the woods. We were at one house in the
woods. Everyone had American accents?
Yes. It was all very bizarre, but I was excited to be doing that.
Yeah, but, you know, that movie's not really horror in the sense that it's more torture porn than it is horror.
Yes.
But holy shit, it is really intense.
It's so good.
It's really intense.
And I'm not saying it just because I'm in it, because I know that a lot of stuff I'm in is not good. I love Last House on the Left. I mean, the other two bad guys are Aaron Paul and Garrett Dillahunt.
And Garrett Dillahunt, yeah.
And they're I just remember it was before, it was like after season one of Breaking Bad, but before I think the world realized that Aaron Paul was like such a genius.
Right.
And I hadn't really seen Garrett in anything. And we had a rehearsal and I was like, oh my God, I'm with like amazing act. Like, I'm like, this is like the big
leagues. Well, Garrett was two different characters in Deadwood.
That's what everyone said, but I hadn't seen it.
So I
didn't know, like, it was, but after the first rehearsal, I was like, oh my God, I get to like be bad guys with these two people for like 3 months.
And then
amazing.
Was Tony Goldwyn the dad?
Tony was in it.
And
yeah.
Sarah Paxton, who I hadn't seen, cause I wasn't the right age group, but over Halloween, Lydia bought like every iteration of Halloween Town. And so it recontextualized that movie for me. I was like, oh my God, this changes the tone of the movie for me even more, because she was this like kid star.
She was like a Disney star.
And then is in this super fucked up. She was on the podcast maybe like 4 years ago,
three
or 4 years ago.
But yeah, it is an intense. Mm-hmm. I mean, the original movie is intense.
Yes.
But the remake was fucking really intense.
I thought the original was way more intense.
You thought so?
If you watch the original, the woman, like, there's so much more nudity. There's, like, the woman, they forced this woman to pee her pants. And I was reading about the thing. They made her do that. She, like, actually peed, like, during the production.
Oh.
It was a whole, because it was so low budget, it was Wes Craven's first movie he directed.
They just couldn't afford they didn't stage
think
pee.
They just didn't think of it or something. I don't know. It was, like... Yeah, the stories behind it and the original Last House on the Left was so crazy that it basically ruined everyone's career who was in it. Like, they just never worked again because they were associated with this. Wow. You know?
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so when they came to you with the... Did you audition for it?
Yep.
You did?
Yeah.
And your hair was, like, black? Or was it black or was it...
No, it was blonde when I auditioned. And then I think because Monica Potter was in it and Sarah and me and we were all blonde.
Oh, gotcha.
They wanted to differentiate. And it was my first day, like, hair and makeup test in South Africa. And the director, this guy, Dennis Iliadis, who I love, he walks into the trailer, walks over to me, looks at me and goes, "Diet black." And then just walked out. I was like, okay.
All right, here we go.
I guess we're going to dye it black.
Here
then,
we go.
Yeah. And my hair is still recovering.
Still?
Yeah. Yeah, because they put extensions in with these beaded extensions, like these antiquated ones that ruin your hair. And then they would dye it with like box color so it looked sort of trashy. And they dyed it over and over again to keep it the same color because it took place over one night.
And let me take a guess. That is great for your hair health?
It's terrible.
Oh, gotcha.
And then I got back, we took the extensions out and dyed it back to blonde. And it was like, oh, yikes. And then I got a role on Big Bang Theory where they're like, you need to dye your hair red immediately. So I dyed my hair red. And then went back to blonde in this small period of time. And since then, I've had hair extensions.
Well, yeah, because you can't... I think once you dye it blonde, mm-hmm. you have to not touch it for a long time, right? Otherwise, it'll just, like, fall out.
It just falls out. Yeah, I had, like, kind of like a long mullet. I was like, oh, shit. So I've had hair extensions for, like, 10 years now.
Another period is a triumphant show.
Thank you.
Because it is... First of all, it... It's so in the Comedy Central landscape. It's so unique. It's such a brilliant idea. Like, just the concept of it is great.
Thank you.
But it
does not necessarily fit on that channel. But it doesn't really fit on any channel.
I don't know really what Comedy Central is tonally anymore. Like, I don't really.
That's true. It's really diverse.
It's just kind of a lot of things.
Yes, that's true.
And I think they're just. Anything that kind of stands out for them, it's not, I wouldn't really know how to define Comedy Central anymore.
That's true. Cause it used to be like for like young dudes or something, but now it's like The Daily Show and all the, you know,
Broad City and
Drunk History.
And Drunk History. Yeah. So are you making more or was it just 3 seasons?
Well, we don't know yet. It's coming out in January 23rd. And then, I guess we're just waiting to hear after that. So we don't know. I hope we can make more because we have just so many ideas and so many.
Well, there's so many great people on the show too.
God, it's crazy.
And it really is like a comedy petri dish of like every funny person just mushed into one show.
It's really like, I am so obsessed with our cast and like, that's like the fun part about writing it is like, we're like, okay, so what do we want to see Brett Gelman do? And we're like, okay, one, everything. Like we want to see him do everything, but we're like, what do we want to see Brian Husky do? And it's like, that's kind of where we start the storylines from is we're just like, okay, what's the funniest thing to see Natasha do? Like,
do you guys write it together? Just you and Natasha write it together?
We write it together, but then we also have a writing staff.
Great.
So we have a writer's room that we had to quickly learn how to show run.
A writer's room is a very interesting thing to, because when you don't really have experience with that, you just go, you just put a bunch of funny people together and it'll mm-hmm. work. And then you realize, oh no,
no,
a writer's room has to be a well-functioning organism.
Yep.
And you really
and people have different functions.
They have different functions yes. and everyone has to have like, okay, well we can't have like two quick joke writers
right.
without the balance of like a good story yeah. comedy writer and a good this
and
kind of writer.
And the type of person who's going to write on the whiteboard, like that kind right. of organized person.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
yeah. Like you need all those things. And yeah, of course our initial instinct is of course to like have all of our hilarious quick joke teller people, but you're like, no, you have to write an entire story.
And it takes a mm-hmm. while to find, and a lot of times, you know, you can figure out like what the exact balance is mm-hmm. right before you wrap a show. Like, oh, this is
they
it.
They should
like,
have done. Yeah.
Fuck.
Season 3 was like definitely the, we knew how to run the room much more, well, which is good. Cause it's, you know, our latest season, but it was one of those things where Natasha and I, for the first time discussed like, how do we get the best out of each writer? Because we hadn't thought of that. And we're like, right. Oh, we can do anything. And we had this one writer who's so amazing, but he's like a little quiet and a little, and it's, and next to like, you know, our like loudmouth show off people, which is almost everyone else.
Right.
We felt like we weren't getting the best out of him. And we were like, do you want to write from home? And he was like, oh my God, yes. Yes. And we're like, should we try it? And I'm like, we're like, you can come in anytime. This is not, we're not sending you away. But, and then he started writing from home until like 3 o'clock every day. And he would send us the best shit. And
he just needed to be right alone.
Yeah. He just needed, he just wasn't, you know, Mr. like take over the room personality,
right.
But the stuff he was sending was brilliant. And then like some people, it was better to like go in a pair in the other room and the two of them would work something out. And then, yeah, it just, we didn't realize till season three that not everyone has a comedian personality and a show off personality, and they're just as brilliant, but they don't.
Yeah. You know. Show running it, or like even being head writer, I think just because of the way that our brains work very linearly, you go, oh, that is better. But then when you do it, you realize, oh, I'm doing, now I have to organize everyone and be a manager.
Yep.
And I just want to be a creative person.
You just want to write. And then you end up, all of my writing always came last. I would always rewrite other people's writing, or it was, yeah, Natasha and I, like, we would just, you know, stay home over Christmas break and write or something, you know, because our stuff just, you just end up pushing your own stuff.
And how do you know when do you ever feel like a joke is done, or do you feel like, I don't know, let's try this and we'll see. Or do you have really good gut instincts about like, I know this is going to work. Mm-hmm. And how's your success rate on that?
It's pretty good. It's funny because I remember, so David Wayne, who plays my husband on the show, we were doing, I think it was, we were editing the pilot for Garfunkel & Oates, and he was working in the same building, and he came in and I said, do you have any advice? Cause he's been doing this forever. And he was like, the one piece of advice is if something made you die laughing when you thought of it, use that joke. Don't use the joke that's newer. Like, even though you wrote that joke 3 months ago, it's still the funniest joke.
All right.
Like, you might be tempted to always do like the latest thing because that's what's funniest to you now.
Right.
And he was like, but if it made you fall on the floor laughing, trust that and use it.
Oh, that's really good advice.
Yeah. And so we try to like remember when something like just tickled us to no end. And we're like, nope, that's the joke. That's the right joke. You know, and you know, sometimes they get topped, but usually we try to stick to the original.
I wonder if... Because that's a show, that's totally a show where you could just spin a movie out of it.
We've thought about it. I Kate Micucci and I were talking about writing a stage musical of it.
Oh, that's...
Because we already have 4 songs. We have 2 songs this, we have 2 songs this upcoming season. Armin Weitzman, who plays our butler Garfield, has a whole storyline where he's an orphan and he goes to look for his parents. And so we have like Orphan Annie songs that he sings, but he's a 35-year-old man.
Oh my God. You would... I think you would destroy.
Wouldn't that be fun?
On Broadway. I think
Kate and I are working on a musical right now.
Fuck.
We've been working on it for a while. It's a longer process than anything else.
But I also think in another period musical.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Because I think people know what it is.
Yes.
And you could really focus on just one self-contained story and workshop it and workshop the shit out of it until it's like tight.
Yeah.
And I think people, I mean, I think it could be like, you know, the next Book of Mormon.
Oh, where, man, that'd be amazing.
Where people, I mean, I'm not really a Broadway person.
You're not?
Not really.
Oh, I'm such a Broadway person.
I will go, oh, you are?
Oh, I'm such a theater dork. I went to see Something Rotten last night at the Amundsen. I'm such a theater dork.
Oh, how bad was it? Hey, guys. I don't know anything about anything. Because for me, I get frustrated as much as I love writing like comedy songs. I get frustrated with musicals because I just feel like I get frustrated the thing that makes them function, which is like, you're just singing the subtext of the scene. You know, like it's expositional. It's emotionally expositional, you know. But, and so it's hard for me to take myself out of that and just be a spectator.
That's a valid criticism of musicals. They actually address it in Something Rotten. There's a whole show about, because it takes place in Shakespearean times, and it's like guys who are inventing the musical. They're thinking of,
how
do we get people to come see this? And, you know, someone's like, write songs, and they're like, what? And it's this whole discussion about how awkward and like, you can't really get past the fact that they're singing. And that's what that's what the musical's about, which is funny.
Got it. Yeah. I just met this guy in New York. I was doing a thing with NBC, and they have a show coming up called Rise.
Okay.
And it's the showrunner is the guy who wrote Friday Night Lights. And then the other executive producer is this guy that they introduced me to named Jeffrey Seller. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey Seller, it turns out, produced Hamilton, Rent, Avenue Q. Those were the three top line ones. I'm like, damn, holy shit.
Those are all life-changing for
me. And so Rise is basically it looks like, if you like musicals, it's basically, it kind of reminded me of Fame a little bit.
Man, I'm just letting the producers of Rise know right now I'm Tech Avail and I would love to be on your show. That's all I'm saying. I would love to write you a song or be on your show. Just saying.
She's just saying, you guys. But it takes the Fame element out of it, where it's like, it's a high school drama program.
Oh, nice.
So it's a musical show, but it's more about how, you know, these kids' lives are profoundly affected by having this music program in their school. And no one's like trying to get famous. But it's just like very communal and cathartic for them.
Oh, it's already my favorite show.
Yeah. And Josh Radnor's in it. And Rosie Perez is in it.
Really?
And the girl who played Moana is in it. And like, it's just.
How good was she at the Oscars? She was like 16. The Moana girl.
Yeah, she's only 17 now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Do you remember she got like hit in the head while she was singing at Oscar? Like with like a flag or something? Like it wasn't.
Oh, right.
But I was like, you were at the Oscars and you got hit in the head and you're singing a solo and it didn't even faze her.
I haven't watched the Oscars the last couple of years.
Oh, you missed the best one then.
You know what? Because it just.
When Moonlight won.
Oh,
when La La Land?
Oh, that. Yeah, I mean, I saw all the, right. I saw like, whatever sort of Twitter moment version of that happening. But it's, you know, the Oscars are just so serious.
Oh God, I know.
And it's and we're in a time now where there's so much social pressure to like, nothing's funny. Don't make fun of anything. Fuck you. You know, because people are so angry. And understandably so. There's a lot of shitty things going on.
It's hard to write comedy songs right now.
It's really weird to write comedy, period. And I.
Nothing feels important.
Right.
Or it just feels like, what am I going to write about my friend being late? You know, like I've got no, like.
But can I tell you, I would still invest time in that because I think people do need that escape.
They do.
They do need that escape. I mean, if you feel really compelled to write social satire, like real biting social commentary about all the horrible things that are going on, I would say do it, but I wouldn't say you have to do it. I think if you feel writing your friend is late songs, that means that there is X number of other people out there who would love to have a break from the really toxic news cycle of everything that's, you know, everything that's going on.
That's true. I went to see Tig and Rory Scovel a few weeks ago.
Oh my God, what a great, are they performing together?
Yes. Well, no, I mean, he opened.
Opens for her, but that's what I mean. They're on the same bill.
He opened with like an hour and she did like an hour. So it was amazing. It was at Largo, but they both did not too much topical stuff and it didn't bother. I was like, oh, this is great. Like Rory has, I don't know if you've seen that bit he has where it's like about, a Batman in a small town where everyone just recognizes him, you know? And he's like, it's an amazing bit that I'm totally ruining, but it's.
Did she do her Indigo Girls bit?
She didn't do it this time. She only did new stuff this past time, but got her Indigo. I love, Tig is just the best.
She, just for people who don't know, Tig spent, I think maybe 20 minutes at the Comedy Central Comedy Festival, Clusterfest, because I was on that show. Almost her entire set was fucking with the audience about bringing out the Indigo Girls and whether or not the Indigo Girls were actually there. And she kept going back to it. And it was so inspired. Like, oh my God, how did you... every time she brought it back, it killed more
every
each time.
She's so funny. She did... I guess one time she did the Indigo Girls bit for... what's that Ira Glass show?
This is American Life.
Yeah, sorry, so brain scramble. For that, and then they did come out finally.
came out. Well, that's what's great about that bit is that it's funny if they come out, and it's funny if they don't come out.
Yeah,
it's just like a perfect. It's a bulletproof bit.
God, she's so.
Because even if you don't know who the Indigo Girls are, that name is, you know, like. If you say it enough, it starts to become funny.
Yeah.
Tig's so fucking great because I've always adored her, mm-hmm. And she, you know, she's fearless. She beat cancer. She did a set without her shirt on so you could see that she beat cancer.
It's crazy.
And she's just like a fucking badass. Like I have nothing but respect for her. Sometimes I hear, I'll hear people complaining about their careers or, oh, no one wants this or no one wants to hire me or and I go, what are you pitching?
Right.
What are you trying to do? What are you trying to create? What are you trying to, I mean, it's, you know, like you...
It's harder to have sympathy for people who aren't also trying to make something happen.
You make so many things. You never stop making things, probably largely due to your insomnia, but you never stop making things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people to understand that you can't really complain. I mean, I guess you can, but if you're not doing everything you can to try to make it work,
it's really hard to have sympathy. I spoke at a class recently about low budget show running. Mm-hmm. And cause it was these people who were like thinking of making their own shows and things. And I spoke at it, and you could see the disappointment in some people's faces about how hard it is, you know, like at every turn, it's so much work and it's so hard. And, people wanted like that magic bullet answer. And some people were just like, they got it. And they were like, yep, I'm going to start doing that. You know, but it was interesting seeing the divide in people and in their questions. And they're like, but what if I just, and it's like, whatever comes after the just is,
you know,
don't do that.
I think a lot of people don't realize that they do have power, that mm-hmm. they really do have their own. I mean, it's like, okay, you may not necessarily have the power to like go make a high budget movie if, sure. on a whim,
sure,
but power in the sense that, because you and I have had conversations before, because I think we were both into like, you know, hyper motivational studies.
Yes.
It's like, how do we...
I love self-help books.
I do too,
stuff.
Because they, you know, even though, you know, a percentage of them are, there are a lot of repetitive concepts.
Yes.
Which means that they are, there's probably some truth to them.
Yes.
There is a lot of garbage out there, but I sort of feel like even if you just retain one morsel of information mm-hmm. from anything, it's better than if you were just like listening to the same playlist you were listening to in your car over and over and over again.
I totally agree. Because there's been things that I've taken from these books that I have never lost. And I'm like,
what's your favorite?
One of the things that kind of changed my life is I was reading this book about willpower. Uh-huh. Have you read the studies about willpower, how you have a limited resource of willpower?
No.
So it's a limited resource, and they've studied it a lot. And it's not something, like you have as much as you have. And it's not something that you can necessarily expand. Like you can sort of, but then like the next day you're too tired. Like it's just a limited resource. And so you have to decide what to use your willpower on. So when I'm like doing a really hard project or writing or something, I'm not worried about, you know, eating a vegan lunch. I'm just right. like, give me pizza. Like I don't work out that morning. I don't use my willpower.
Because you need that energy yes. to focus on the other thing.
I need all my willpower to get through this draft.
Right.
And so I don't work out that morning. I don't worry about returning emails. I don't like, or whatever things that take any willpower. Like, I don't know if returning emails takes willpower, but anything that takes any of that juice, I don't do it.
Right.
I don't go get food. I order it. I make things easy on myself when I'm trying to concentrate my willpower.
Got it.
So that was very helpful.
That's great. I think.
What was yours?
Well, I think we live in an infomercial age mm-hmm. where people just want to be like a P90X commercial. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want abs. I just want yeah. rock hard abs in like a couple weeks.
Right.
And
just want to revolutionize television.
Yeah, exactly. And the truth of the matter is that the path to success or the creative process can be it's very unromantic in a sense, mm-hmm. or it's very unsexy
yeah.
in the sense that it's like, I think people just want to see, oh, I want to throw 100% of my energy into this thing for a day, and then I want everything to be changed. And it's like, no. Understanding the power of sort of like compounded interest mm-hmm. in an account of incremental change, that even though someone might say to themselves like, well, you know, I have to work this one job because I have a family and I don't have a choice and all this, I would say, yes, I understand. Mm-hmm. I think there are probably places where you have choices where you don't realize mm-hmm. because it's so automated. Mm-hmm. Even in just the way that you view things in your life,
yes.
or how you perceive things,
or how you like have your schedule, which I think is interesting because everyone's got. Have you read that? It's called like Creative Habits. Have you read that book?
No.
It's amazing. It's like all. It's like Creative Habits of all these amazing artists throughout time, and it's like how they all sort of found like treating yourself like an experiment mm-hmm. where you're like, do I write better if I wake up at 6 a.m? Or do I write better at midnight? Or do I write better
great.
After I've had a glass of wine? Or do I write better, you know, with coffee? Or do I write like using yourself as a science experiment
right.
and figuring that out? Cause like, even if you do have a full-time job, there's probably ways to maximize your creativity that you haven't invested in yet.
Or even if it's just one, you know, the getting things done methodology is interesting, but it can be a little tedious when you mm-hmm. get into it, but it's just sort of the idea of like, you know, getting all of your thoughts out of your head and onto paper or onto whatever, you know, if you use Evernote or whatever your writing program is, and then writing down what your goals are. And then, but also understanding emotionally, like what your emotional motivation for those goals are. Because some people might go, well, I just want $1 million. Okay, why do you want $1 million? Right. I don't know, because it's better. All right, that's not enough of a reason.
No.
You need to understand, like, the more specific you can get with your goal setting. And then once you understand emotionally why you want that thing, then breaking down into steps, is there any even tiny incremental thing I can do today that moves me a little bit closer to that thing? And it might take a few months before you really start to see the results of it. But eventually, it
adds up.
Is kind of like an aircraft carrier turning that you will start to feel. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe when you start making decisions that are beneficial to you over time, it really will make a difference.
Especially if it's like writing or comedy, because every time you do it, you get better at it.
Right.
Even if you have a terrible set, you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that again. Or you learn how to handle a heckler or like whatever it is, like you get better at it every time you do it. So it is incremental.
Yeah. I mean, no remotely reasonable comedian would think, oh, I'm just going to write a perfect hour set on a Thursday and then I'm going to go do it on a Friday.
Oh my God. Although Kate and I thought that at the beginning, because we didn't know comedians. The only comedian we knew was Doug Benson.
Right.
And we actually hadn't seen him do stand-up. We'd only seen him do Douglas movies or the Benson Interruption. And so we didn't actually know. And the third show we ever did was an hour. And we like didn't totally have enough material, but we're like, oh, it's fine. Like we played twice live and then we were like, oh, let's rent out a space and do an hour show. Cause we didn't know that people worked years to get an hour. And so we played like some covers. We read like Ashanti poetry from this book. We just like,
but you know, what's great about that is that you learn. That's how you learn. You took a risk and you learned.
Mm-hmm. We did that twice. And then we started playing shows with like in the Scott Aukerman crew. And we were like, oh, we got to get better fast.
Right.
Like we were doing okay. Like we kept the show going, you know, and we got laughs and stuff, but you can feel that palpable difference between, you know, you and Patton Oswalt when you've been doing comedy.
Oh my
for
God.
Two
well, Patton is a guy that Thursday could write an hour set and Friday tape it.
He is. Yes.
Unless you're Patton.
Okay. Unless you're Patton.
He's one of the rare exceptions.
You can feel that difference in that Kate and I were just like, oh, we got to get better and we got to do it now, or we're not going to be in this crew very long.
Right.
Like we kind of got lucky getting these spots in these shows and we're like, we're not going to be here very long if we don't improve.
Right.
And it was cool. And we went to see a lot of comedy and just, you know, just worked on it day and night.
Oh, and you, by the way, just a side note, I was going to invite you to see All & Oates because we got a, you know, like we went with a group.
Oh,
and
nice.
You already went.
I was already there.
Yeah. And I already saw that you went the night before.
I see them every time they're here, I think. Well, Kate and I are friends with John Oates.
I know.
He's the best. We love him. He once took me guitar shopping in Nashville.
Holy shit.
That was like a dream. I was just like, I am guitar shopping.
So he's got a pretty good sense of humor about the whole thing.
Oh my God. He contacted us on MySpace when we first started and sent us this message. And he was like, I heard you're using my name. And he's like, I grant you permission if I get free beer at your shows. And we were like, holy shit. And he's like, do you guys want to jam sometime? And we're like, yes. Obviously.
Have you jammed with John Oates?
Totally, totally. But John is such an amazing player. And Kate and I are, you know, we're fine. We're fine. I'm much better than I was when I started, but I'm still just fine. And so we're like, you know, he'd be like, take it away. And we're like, no, you. We're going to play these three chords.
We're going to kick it back over to
yeah.
you.
Like Kate's not like doing like uke solos. You know, we were just like, uh-huh. I'm like, I'll shake these maracas.
But Art Garfunkel is less.
Never met him.
Right.
Never heard from him. We'd love to meet him. But he was on Flight of the Conchords, so he must have some funniness somewhere
or something or someone talked him into it
right but yeah, I mean he must have heard of us just because if you Google Garfunkel we come up right away, you know, so he must.
That was also interesting to use two other people's names as your identity.
Yeah.
You know, as you're like,
that was the best. That was so fun. I basically like relentlessly harassed Kate until she let us have that name. because I went to see Hall & Oates at the Bowl and we were in the back and so we could only really see the screen and the cameraman had a close up on Hall and then it was like Oates and the band and there was no two shot and there was no John close up and I'm like, that's hilarious. Like, that's crazy. Like, it was just...
Do they not get along at all?
I don't know. It seemed like the cameraman at least thought that.
Right.
And I was just like, this is really funny and thought of that name and then And then, yeah, Kate wasn't totally feeling it. And so we thought of like so many other bad names. And then we basically had no name. And we went to record these songs at this studio. And Kate had recorded her part and she left. And I was with him and I was like, well, we're thinking about calling Garfunkel & Oates. He's like, it has to be that. And I was like, it does, right? And he was like, it has to be that. And I was like, let's call Kate. And we called her a bunch of times. She was at like Chinese food dinner. She comes out. She's like, what? And we're like, it has to be Garfunkel. And it has to be. Both of us were on the phone. We're like, Kate, this is its destiny. This is what it has to be. And she was finally like, oh, fine.
Fine.
Yeah. So that's kind of how it happened.
But it's been difficult for you. I would imagine it's,
first of all, it's very difficult to keep a band together. It's difficult to keep.
Oh my God. It's so hard.
When the two of you or four of you, however many, mm-hmm. have to drive it, like with something like Another Period, you know, an organization will say, you are going back to work at this time.
Yes. Here Comedy Central's like, here's what's happening.
But yeah. When you are that governing body mm-hmm. and there's no real, there's no real, I guess, accountability to anyone but yeah. yourself. Boy, that is very hard to prioritize that. Cause you're like, well, I don't know. I got to do this other
it's
stuff.
It's hard. Cause it's, you know, you don't make a ton of money, at least not at first, doing comedy. And it was hard to sort of give up other things. But then it just got easier and easier because I was so happy about what we were doing. And, like, I just remember I had dinner with this friend of mine and I was like, I'm thinking about not doing pilot season because I was just is an actor. And so, like, that's all you wait for is pilot season. And he was like, what do you mean? I'm like, I want to, like, create and star my own show. And he was like, yeah, don't we all? And I was like, nobody really, really wanted to. And he's like, uh-huh, totally. And he was so flippant and dismissive that I was like, I'm not doing pilot season.
Well, good.
I'm going to fucking create and start my own show. And I told my agents I wasn't doing pilot season and they were like, what? I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be in some 7-year contract.
I remember the year I decided that I wasn't going to do pilot season either. It was so freeing because you have no power.
No.
And the only power you have is to just not do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only,
or at least figure out how to make it enjoyable for yourself.
Yes.
You could do that. But I did not enjoy the process right. at all. Mm. And that felt so good.
But I didn't want to be in a 7-year contract because then, like, when would we make the Garfunkel & Oates show? Like,
right.
If I was, yeah.
Yeah, it is sort of a good news, bad news situation where you go, oh, I'm finally on this show. I mean, I've had friends who their whole goal was to get on a sitcom and then it got picked up. Mm. And then it got picked up and it got picked up and they were like, oh, I can't do anything else. And now someone listening to that might go, well, fuck you. You're getting paid money and you're going to go, yeah, but you still have creative desires. Yes. You still want to be able to do things. And, you know, 7 years is the better part of a decade of your life.
Yes. It's a real commitment. It's
and if you get so identifiable as that one character, then you could work for 7 years and then not again for a lot more.
Ever, maybe. Yeah. Although I feel like that's happening less now because there's so much content. But
yes, there's a lot of cross-pollination too. And mm-hmm. people understand that, you know, that the media is different. But I think,
It's a big commitment. Well, and also, like, I was auditioning for dramas too. So, like, being on a hour drama is like you work, you know, 15 hours a day. And
oh, yeah.
It's
and there's no, it could be
life.
Like, oh, your call time's 3 p.m., your call time's 6 a.m., your call time's 5 a.m. Like, there's mm-hmm. no.
You can't make other things.
There's, yeah, you mm-hmm. you just can't. And yeah. the time that you have off, you're exhausted.
Yeah. And, like, you know, Padgett Brewster, who's on Another Period, she's also on Criminal Minds.
Is she still on?
And, yeah. And so, yeah, she actually, well, she accepted the.
She's so fucking funny.
She's so fucking good. So, but she, they asked her to come back to the show, and she said, only if you carve out Another Period.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And they were like at first probably a little bit like, carve out what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, what is this? Like, you know, because that show's like, I think it's the number one drama in the world. And, you know, we're obviously a tiny show and a tiny thing. But yeah, they carved it out for her. But like even hearing about her schedule, I was like, whoa, that shows a lot. Like she works a lot.
That's great. Well, I think and you were doing Making It, the Making It podcast for a while.
Yes.
Are you going to go back to that?
I keep wanting to. And then it just basically, when I got a TV show, it was,
yeah.
I ran out of energy. I couldn't
totally
do it
understand.
Anymore. Yeah.
But
I don't know how you keep all these balls in the air. You seem to be able to do a lot of different things.
Well, yeah, I try, but I just,
how do you, here's the thing that I'm bad at. This is my self-help advice that I need from you is how do you reset your brain? Like if say after this, you're going to go and write something, like what do you do to change over to the different mode?
I think I'm excited by the, I'm excited by the freshness of the other thing that invigorates me because I'm not going to say that I have ADHD, but I do have only so much attention span for things.
Right.
And so this kind of piecemealed modular career I have where I do one thing mm-hmm. for a couple hours and another thing for a couple mm-hmm. hours and another, it's very much how my brain works. And so,
so that is I
do logical. Like that. But if you can find anything in it, it's rather than looking at the next thing as a chore, yeah. like, oh, now I got to lift another rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of being invigorated by the passion part that you're excited about, which is why I think it's important, you know, to do things that you really care about.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you do things that you don't care about, and obviously you don't always have that luxury and not everyone has that luxury, but mm-hmm. if you can, then finding those little nuggets of things that you're passionate about help you sort of do that packet switching so that when you start the next thing, you're excited about it because it's something that you're excited to make happen.
I'm going to try to shift my focus that way because I always have a hard time doing more than one thing in a day.
Yeah.
And it's not great for the type of career I've chosen.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I feel like having to, you know, we have to kind of diversify our careers the way you would a stock portfolio mm-hmm. because you just don't ever know. It's like, well, I don't know if another period's coming back. Well, I got to work on this. Well, I got to do this. Now I got to do this. So I think it's really important to only work on things that you give a shit about, or at mm-hmm. least if you're forced to work on stuff that you don't give a shit about, mm-hmm. if you're in that situation, is there a lot of it's, you know, a lot of it's asking your brain the right questions.
Yeah.
Is rather than saying like, oh my God, what am I, you know, this, how is this not going to suck? Or, you know, at least just kind of
like conference calls or things like that.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
like, oh, okay.
Just at least sort of understanding the nugget of the reason for why it's important to you. And is mm-hmm. it going to drive you closer to this thing that you want, and can it, or is there something you can learn from it, or what can be, you know, if you really ask yourself like, well, what is positive about this thing? Mm-hmm. Your brain might give you an answer that you weren't really expecting because you've just mm-hmm. kind of autopiloted that it's going
to
suck.
Or it might be like nothing, and then you have to like rethink your
it might be
your
like
choices.
If you get enough nothing, and again, you know, I'm sure people listening are like, fuck you, it's easy. You know, you have, and it's like, yeah, but I wasn't always that way.
And it doesn't just apply to things that are hugely successful. Like it applies to everything you, like anyone who's trying to be an artist, like your whole day is choices of what you know, if you're trying to be a writer, like you wake up in the morning and no one's telling you what to write. Like you have to pick, like
right.
you're deciding and you're pitching it to people and you're, you know,
but it's also
taking
very
a class.
Easy. It's also very easy to get addicted to, especially for people with obsessive personalities, get addicted to the honeymoon period,
mm-hmm.
not just of, it's sort of like dating. It's like mm-hmm. Like new relationship energy.
Mm-hmm.
You have that with projects.
Yeah, like a new idea. You're like, oh, I love it.
And then
it gets hard.
Exactly. It gets mm-hmm. hard because maintenance is not sexy.
No.
Or at least I don't, you know, like I don't, it's like getting something up and running. Oh, you're brimming with ideas mm-hmm. and you just feel all that. Oh, you're just so excited. And then it's like, now what do I? So
page 75 of my script, and now
on a rewrite.
Yeah,
you know, like
I still don't know what to do with the second half of Act 2.
So I guess it's really understanding like what it is that you want, and if you can understand what it is that you want out of that process, maybe you can focus on that rather mm-hmm. than the thing itself, or trying to understand like how to get something done, how to like beat the clock on your excitement so that you're like, you get.
Oh, that's a good idea. I've never thought of that. Like try to like get it done before I'm not excited anymore.
It's a little bit of a time, like a race.
Ooh, that's kind of
like,
fun.
It is kind of fun because it goes back to what you were saying about understanding how your brain works
mm-hmm.
because how many of us know, or how many of us are those people that have a string of, you know, of initiated projects. And then at a certain point, you're like, ah, this is dumb.
Yeah.
But it's also like saying
so many things I do, I get to a certain point, I'm like, this is terrible. But that's part of it. Like, that's, you know, you have to do like a few days of work on something before you can be like, even know if it's a real idea.
But you also know that if you also understand that that there's more to the process than just that initial, you know, hot, sexy energy
mm-hmm.
When you're excited about an idea, that you know that you can get excited about an idea again. So when your brain says, like, well, this is dumb, or this is terrible, or right. this sucks, or I suck, you can say to yourself, like, yeah, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then because you can find, you will get to another point where you're like, oh my God, this is
why it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
God, it's so fun. Yeah, Kate and I are trying to write a musical right now, and it's a whole new genre. It's a whole new, like, doing stage stuff. It's a whole different part of your brain, and you know, because we just, our songs, you know, you only have to think 3 minutes long,
right?
And this is like they further the plot, and they're all part of this.
Is it existing songs or writing new songs?
We're writing new songs.
Wow.
We're trying. You know, we'll see if this ends up being. We've been trying to write a musical for a long time, but this idea I think is going to be the idea that we keep going on. But you know, we'll see.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, I think you know it's. I hope you consider doing some kind of podcasty thing again at some point, because I think people. I think you could be a really good role model for people who, you know, want to take more charge of their destiny.
Gosh, I should do Making It Again. You know, people like come up to me. It's weird. They have like emotional reactions to the podcast. Like they'll come up to me like almost in tears and be like, that podcast. Like there was a guy who, oh my gosh, last year at the HBO Emmy party, he was there on a show that was nominated for an Emmy. And he was like, I'm here because of you.
Holy shit.
And I was like, oh my God. And he was had tears in his eyes. And he was like, your podcast, he was like, and he told me how his life was going. And it was... You know, all the evidence was pointing to him. This wasn't going to happen for him.
Right.
But then so same with everyone on my podcast, like every piece of evidence, except for a couple people, it seemed like, ooh, this is really dark. Like yeah. This is not going to, nothing's going to ever break. And yeah, he said that he would listen to it obsessively. And he's like, it gave me like a sort of a deep hope.
That's great.
And he's like, and then it worked out. And I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. But I don't think anyone ever feels like, I think very few people start out and go, I think if someone is able to go like, yeah, I'm a shoo-in, you might be a sociopath,
right.
You know, like, but I think everyone feels that sense of like, well, this is never, why would this happen for me? I'm not.
But it's that thing of like, say like 5 years in, 7 years in, and you still don't have the evidence that something's going to break. Like
right.
It's that kind of time where you're like, you know, and you're 7 years better at what you do, so you're actually probably closer than you think, but it feels impossible. And,
but I think
you know.
That's why it's important to keep writing down your goals, mm-hmm. understanding why you want them. They can change over time. Are you still passionate about these things? Are there new ways you can present these things? You know, you always hear this. There's so many stories of someone who was like, I was ready to quit, and then I just... Mm-hmm. I kind of got to that place and I just made this other thing. And then that was the thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you just don't know. You honestly just never know. But
and you look at someone like Karen Kilgariff, who's been brilliant for so long.
Yeah.
And now she's doing the biggest thing she's ever done.
The spot,
and it's out of
just
nowhere.
She was
yeah.
passionate about.
Yeah. And it's not
my favorite murder.
Related to necessarily what she was doing before. I mean, she's so fucking good, but, yeah. And now it's like the biggest thing
But isn't
ever.
It interesting that this podcast essentially pulled together every skill set that she had been working on mm-hmm. over the years.
Yep.
And so it is about being open to, you know, if you are on one path and then just kind of accidentally discovering like, oh, my skill set's actually
a little broader.
Can cross-pollinate with this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so all that, you know, all that time, this is the fruit that it's bearing, mm-hmm. even though it may have been different than what I had foreseen.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How much better, because this is such a unique organism.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a unique thing.
And that show is so funny. It's such a good idea.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it is something that they're passionate about.
Yes.
So I know you're passionate about self-improvement and getting better and making things happen. And so mm-hmm. I think it is helpful to people if you ever get a chance.
Gosh, I really want to, I will. I want to go back. I do. I want to do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
Right now, right. If I know you by tonight, yeah. You'll be like,
"That's the thing." That's so true. There's so many people. It is. I went to. Did you go to Scott and Kulop's Christmas party?
No, I wasn't able to go. I was out of town.
But there were so many people that I was talking to there that I'm like, oh, I haven't interviewed them. Like they would be great. Like so many people who make things at that party. That
yeah, like, and you learn from it, and the audience will learn from mm-hmm. it while you're learning from it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's great. It's really great.
I want to do it.
There was another piece of advice that I found really interesting in sort of dealing with other people that a therapist told me once, which was listen to people. They will tell you who they are if you really listen.
That's so true.
So, you know, when we were sort of going back to like, mm-hmm. like looking at people's art when they talk about, you know, if someone constantly says on stage like, hey, I'm a piece of shit. Maybe you know, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not saying all the time.
Right.
And that's why it's tricky with comedy, because you never know what's enhanced or what's
the
not.
And what things are real. Like someone like Anthony Jeselnik, who's the nicest guy in the world and his persona is so dark.
Right. You're
like, okay, well, that one does not really apply. But a lot of people you can.
But even in relationships, though, like how many times have you been in relationships where
so many
where someone legitimately when you go back and you go, oh my God, I told, they were telling me, mm-hmm. and I just like swatted the information out of the way because, you know, this is why lust can be such a difficult thing to manage.
It's so
because
hard. And
it deafens you.
And loneliness, like
right.
someone who like stops you from being lonely and you know, you like want them lustily.
But you start making exceptions and you start making exceptions and you start making exceptions. And then you can get to a point in a relationship where you go, how did it get to this point? And you're like, well, because you made a lot of exceptions mm-hmm. because you didn't want to listen. Mm-hmm. And, now it's messy.
And it's weird. And my last relationship, he told me, like accidentally, like why we were going to break up. Like he sort of accidentally said this thing and I was like, what is that? And this was like a month in.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and my whole body was like sort of shut down. And I was like, that's what is that? Like, that feels really weird. And I feel like that's what's going on. And he was like, no. Oh, I misspoke, whatever. And I was like really mad about it. And then he sort of talked me out of it. And then like 6 months later, a similar sort of sentiment came up and I was like, that's what the thing is. And he's like, no, it's not. And then when we finally broke up, I was like, it was that, it's this.
It's that thing. And you tried to tell me and I didn't listen.
And then he's finally like, yeah, that's the thing. And I was like, cool.
Have you ever had friends who dated someone and they, or if you've ever dated someone in the beginning, the other person goes, is like, I've cheated on the last few people, but you know, and then you go, oh, okay. Cause then in your brain, you're like, I'm not me. And then that person cheats on them. They're like, they told you up front that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I'm not, you know, I don't want this to be misconstrued mm-hmm. as like blaming the victim, but I also think it's important. You know, when people try to tell you who they are.
Like, listen.
Yeah, listen. You can listen to
and
them.
And if you're okay with that, like, some people don't care that much about infidelity. And if you're okay with that, then, yeah, keep going.
But if that's the agreement, if that's the agreement that you have, like, I think most agreements are okay as long as both parties are aware and agree.
Yes.
But anything that's not agreed upon, you know, like, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I was dating a guy that long ago and he was like, yeah, I always do this thing where just like out of nowhere for no reason I'm just like not interested in the person I'm dating anymore. And then like that's totally what happened. Like it was going really well, like, and then just kind of out of nowhere suddenly he was like just like ended it. And I was like, well, that's weird. Sort of, I'm like, oh, he told me on our first date.
You know, it's also easy to say like, oh, you know, you should listen to people tell you. But you know, if you're in a situation and someone tells you that, what are you supposed to do really? Are you supposed to go like, oh, okay, well, let's just end this now. Because you just told me how this is going. Oh, no, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean it.
No, because, like, what if it's not true in the situation or what?
Right.
Yeah, it's a red flag, but it's not necessarily, like, a stop sign. Like,
right.
Although the other guy that it was a year in where I was like, this was the thing. Like, that one, my body shut down. Like, I should have listened to that. You know. But the guy who was like, I suddenly, you know, lose interest in everyone. He said it, like, sort of flippantly on our first date, and I didn't really take it in, and it didn't like make my body shut down. So,
well, it's, you know, in any situation, in a dating situation, in a work situation, I do think that the advice that they give you when you're kids about like not getting into a van,
mm-hmm.
where I think it's still applicable. If something feels wrong, mm-hmm. there's a good chance it's wrong. Like, someone said to me once, your gut is smarter than your brain.
So true.
You know, and like if your body, if you feel, even if you can't really articulate it, if something just doesn't feel right, mm-hmm. it's probably not.
Yeah. It's so hard to trust it though. It's so hard to listen.
It is. I know. It's easy advice to give, but I'm glad that, you're okay. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that,
So we should probably promote Another Period is coming back in January.
January 23rd.
Comedy Central.
Paired with Drunk History this time, which is cool.
Oh, that's great.
I know, right?
It's a good pairing.
Yeah, I know.
It makes all the sense in the world.
It does. We never really had a lead-in before, so this is our first time with like a big, big deal lead-in. So.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's really great. And then you're writing a musical with Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you want to plug?
I'm kind of just writing every day. I've been writing movies and stuff. I haven't been doing much else.
That's great.
So no, nothing.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you sleep. Your apartment looks great from the pictures that I've seen. Looks super cool.
I'm really loving it. Did you see the pictures of the swing?
Yes, I saw the swing hanging.
Like,
is that in your living room?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a dream of a swing, and
fucking fantastic.
I finally have a swing. Yeah.
Are you still in that same building?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Great, 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 great.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you
for having
me.
It was an absolute pleasure talking to you. And,
it was wonderful.
You know, I hope to see you around.
Yeah.
It's like you have friends and you go, well, I never see them except for work things. And then you do a podcast. I go, fuck, we got to invite Ricky over more for... We haven't had as many things over here.
Oh, you have to have a dinner party thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we will. We will for sure. Yeah. Please come back.
I will.
All right. Enjoy your burrito. The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car... Use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.